London Calling. David here. Well, actually, it's London and Paris calling, because I've got Brad from Paris Walks with me, and Brad is going to do a Paris Walks for us on Friday. Over the course of the last month or so, we have broken out. We did one in Rome. We did one in Venice, but those were done by London Walks guides who guide both in Italy and in London. This is Paris and Paris Walks by a Paris Walks guide, Brad. Now, I've known Brad for a long time, probably hammer that out exactly how long or just about how long. But let's go over to Brad. Hello, Brad. How are you?
Great, David. Hi, how are you?
Yeah, fine. Thanks.
I haven't seen you in a while.
I know.
Yeah, no, I think we first met in 1998. I think you came on one of my early tours.
That sounds
98 right. Or maybe early 99, something like that, yeah.
That would be about right, because I think I met Peter in 1995. He came on my Kensington walk and introduced himself.
Oh, wow.
And I think they had just started it then. And that, you know, that was the beginning of a great friendship. You know, he and Oriel were able to introduce us to you and your colleagues at Paris Walks. And it's just been happy times ever since. But, you know, I remember when I first met you on a walk, there we were in Paris. It was ineffably Parisian, and there was this tall, laid-back Californian. I loved it.
That's me.
That's you. Yeah. So, can you tell us a little bit about, well, where in California are you from, Brad?
Well, I grew up in Los Angeles, and I basically lived in Los Angeles until I moved here when I was in my early 30s, I went to school in Los Angeles. I majored in history. I actually got a PhD in history from UCLA. And I was teaching in Los Angeles as well. And I never expected to move to France by any means, although we'd always felt it would be nice to be able to live abroad sometime if we could. And then a job just sort of came out of the blue doing CD-ROMs back in the day when that was the new medium, right? The new technology. And we had a job which wound up lasting for a year or so to do CD-ROMs, a joint venture between a French company and the company my wife and I were working for in Los Angeles. And so we came for a job for a year and then never went back, you know. And after a while, after that job was over, I started doing other jobs. I did a lot of translation work, and I found that it's nice to get outside. I'd spend a lot of time inside of the computer doing translations and things. And so I just happened to go on a walking tour that Paris Walks offered. I thought, oh, well, this would be kind of a fun thing to do. And then I met Oriel and Peter and went on a few of their walks. And at the time, they actually were expanding, so they needed people. So I started doing walks with them. So nothing I would ever would have expected to do. Well, I do have a background as an historian, but so in that sense, it's logical, but nothing I would really expect to have done as a career, say, otherwise. And so we're still here.
Yeah, well, how about that? I mean, I've known you for 20 years, and I just now find out that you've got a PhD, and I've got one too. So that's Dr. Tucker talking to Dr. Newfield. What was yours in?
Mine was in history, U.S. history. I wrote a dissertation on the portrayal of doctors, physicians in popular culture in the 19th, 20th century, including all the way up to television shows and things. And I had a couple of fields in European history, but I certainly, once I moved to Europe, I had to brush up a bit on my European history. But yeah, I've always had quite an interest. And I really enjoyed doing the walking tours because it was really quite a nice combination of different things and different time periods. And I loved doing it. So.
And just for my own curiosity, was it a California university?
Yeah, so it was University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA.
And Brad, had you been to Paris previously?
Yeah, I first came in 1984, and it was a kind of a European trip I did with my wife, and we traveled around various places. We had a friend who lived in Paris, so we stayed in Paris about 3 weeks, and that was basically my first introduction to Paris. And then we moved here about 10 years later after that for a year. I had spent more time traveling elsewhere in Europe. I'd been in Spain a lot, and you know, various other countries in Britain. And then this opportunity came up in Paris.
Okay, but so when you were a youth, when you were growing up, you didn't have any idea that Paris was on the cards for you. Is that
absolutely right? Not. It would not. It would probably be about sixth or seventh on my list of places to live.
Oh, really?
You know, it would have been down the list. I mean, I had the idea it would be nice to live. I'd always lived in Los Angeles. I'd traveled, but I'd never lived anywhere else but Los Angeles. And I probably, if someone said pick a city to live in, I would have maybe picked London or Madrid or Barcelona or Rome or, you know, other cities in Europe or Latin America or you know, some other place. I mean, I was always interested in Paris, and it was, I knew, you know, it was a beautiful city, and I always knew that. But it wasn't, say, my first choice necessarily when I was growing up. Now it's my first choice.
Oh, is it? That's interesting.
And, you know, like Thomas Jefferson, you know, who fell in love when he came to Paris, he was really suspicious of moving to a big, huge city like Paris. And then when he moved here, he fell in love with it. So that's what happens. And then you wind up after being here for a year or two, finding that you can't really live anywhere else. Be very difficult. But it you know, it takes, you don't necessarily know that before you move there. But once you get there, yeah.
Did Jefferson elaborate on what he really liked about it?
Actually what he loved was the walking. And he loved the architecture. He loved shopping. He loved the artwork. He was really, of the American founding fathers, he really was the one who appreciated it and was the most knowledgeable about the fine arts. And of course, he loved classical architecture, and Paris was a great city for that. But he walked about 4 or 5 miles a day, uh-huh. About 12 or 13,000 steps. And he actually invented a pedometer. So he was the inventor of the Fitbit. Jefferson.
Oh, that's fascinating.
He invented a pedometer, and he counted the steps, and it was about 12 to 13,000 steps a day.
Yeah.
That he did.
Paris, like London, is so walkable. And I suppose, I mean, look, I've never been to Southern California. I've never been to L.A., but it's my impression, correct me if I'm wrong, that L.A. isn't very walkable. Is that right?
Not so much. You can't see a lot of the city, and London is, and Paris particularly, is very compact. You can walk across Paris in about 2 hours. Uh-huh. You could walk across Los Angeles in about 2 weeks, maybe. If you, yeah. Uh-huh. And I've actually been on walking tours in Los Angeles, architecture tours, but of course you drive for 45 minutes to get to the, uh-huh. the spot where you could walk around in a little area, or you do tours where you hop in your car for every stop and follow other people around. So it's definitely not a city for walking tours. Uh-huh. And that's probably one of the things that I loved about Paris when I got here, was that it was really the opposite of Los Angeles, uh-huh. in those terms, in terms of having historic architecture, being able to walk everywhere, uh-huh. not being dependent on a car. I haven't had a car since I moved here.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
And what about the language? Did you speak French when you pitched up?
Not at all. I took a semester in college. I'd had a lot more Spanish all through school. And so when I knew I was moving here, I had a couple of months, and I started to study it, but it was not easy. And of course, the jobs that we worked in the beginning, everybody spoke English at the office, so it was difficult to, you know, speak French on the job. And I took a couple of night classes. And actually what really helped me was I took a couple of months off and just studied French full time. But it took a couple of years to really to feel fluent in the language. It wasn't easy.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
As usual, I'm trying to learn French. I've discovered this app called Pimsleur. When I go for a walk now, I've got French coming in my ears. And it's slowly coming. You know, you start to hear a word here and a word there, and then I apply that when I'm, you know, watching something on television that's in French. It's quite satisfying, really, to be.
Yeah, it takes a while.
The way you and your colleagues are. boy, I envy that.
Yeah, it's and one of the things that was difficult for me was trying to improve the accents, you know, and I managed to do it so I could be understood, but it's difficult for me to you know, have a conversation and the person says, "Oh, you have such a charming accent."
Yeah. What about that awful stuff when that moment when you say something in French and they answer immediately in English?
Yeah, that often, and now I find it's because more and more people in France actually speak English and they really want to try out their English. But yeah, sometimes you have to just keep speaking to them in French and then eventually they'll go back to French.
Yeah. Well, Brad, a question I just seem to always ask, you know, when we're little kids, when we're growing up, nobody wants to be a London Walks guide when they're 8 years old or even a guide. In my case, I wanted to be a center fielder for the New York Yankees, or, you know, you want to be an astronaut, or you want to be a doctor or a cowboy or something. You know, what about you? Can you remember when you were kiddy-wink?
Well, my father was a doctor, so I wanted to be a doctor, but I think I went through the whole, you know, fireman, the little things that little boys are always attracted to. And then I think by the time I was probably in high school, I actually wanted to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. That was my idea, and I planned on doing that, and then you know, did that some, but then moved here. So, but of course, doing walking tours has a lot of similarities to being a teacher. So,
yeah,
in a sense, that makes sense.
So that first job, you know, the job that kept the wolf from the door. Did you were you casting about there in California looking for a job in Europe or?
No, so well, at the time that we got the job, I was working for a couple of I was doing several different part-time jobs. I was doing development work for some producers in Hollywood. I was working for a couple of nonprofit organizations and teaching part-time and doing that and doing research jobs and various things. And then I met the people at this company called Voyager Company that was developing CD-ROMs. And because of my background, they had projects that they were interested in doing that had cultural aspect to them. So, and then they were starting up to do work in France. And so my wife and I were both offered jobs to work for them in France. So it was something I just kind of fell into, something I hadn't necessarily been trained for or anything.
And so, I mean, how did you track down Paris Walks? I mean, was there an ad in a magazine or something like that?
Well, somebody had mentioned walking tours to me, and when I first moved to Paris, I'd never heard of walking tours, actually, in 94, and someone said, oh, they had been on a walking tour, and they'd really enjoyed it, and I thought, oh, well, that might be interesting. So I just looked up in the old days when we were listed, before anything was on the internet, we were listed in a couple of the local guides, like Periscope, Officiel du Spectacle, where events of that week would be listed, and they always had an English section, so you could look up things. And so I just found Paris Walks in one of those city guides, and I went on a tour and a couple of tours. And
do you remember what that first walk was?
The first walk I went on was Saint-Germain-des-Prés on the left bank, the Latin Quarter, that area.
And who was guiding it? Do you
remember? The guide was Jenny. And she actually mentioned to me that people were looking for, Peter and Oriel at Paris Walks were looking for guides. And then I went on a March walk with Todd, who was a guide way back then, and walks with several of the other guides, yeah.
Yes, that's right. Todd was an actor, I think. I think we met
him. Yes, right. You probably met him, yeah.
Yeah. And so did you meet Peter on a walk?
So I spoke with them and they suggested I go on one of the walks with them, and so I met Peter at the end of a walk, and then I think I went on Oriel when she did a Montmartre walk as well. Yeah.
And I'm just curious, this is sort of professional curiosity, did they give you any advice? I mean, when we bring on a new guy, you know, we often will say to them, you know, unless it's one that they've created,
right?
if it's a walk that's already there, the advice we always give them is, well, go on it with Sean.
Yes.
See what he's doing, and then
go on it with someone else. Yeah. Yeah, no, so I went on the first walk I did was the Marais, so I went on several Marais walks with different guides, and then I sort of saw the style, and then we worked out what the basic route would be, and then Oriel gave me some of her notes to work on, and so I could kind of see what the style, what kind of things you talk about and what you don't, and the kinds of stories and things you like to tell, and then I sort of wrote out my own path and things to say.
I'm sure I know the answer to this. I'm sure it's the same as it is here. But there's am I right? There's absolutely no script. There's no thing that you memorize. Every guide is effectively creating their own.
Right, right. I find that it's everybody has their own style and their own manner, and everyone has different types of stories they like to tell. Mm-hmm. Or different details. And if you're doing an area like Montmartre or the Marais, there's so many things. You could do a 10-hour tour, so sure. You obviously have to whittle it down to... And some guides like to talk about certain things, and other guides like to talk about others. So it's it's rather spontaneous as well, because people are asking questions, and you often play off what people are interested in or what people ask.
Sure. I can remember Edward Petherbridge, the great English actor. I mean, arguably, along with three or four others, arguably the most famous London Walks guide of all. I can remember him introducing a walk by standing in this spot and saying to them, "Now you realize that if I were to give you the history of this spot, we'd be here the whole 2 hours." Of course, that always impresses our compatriots, Brad, Americans.
Right.
The history is so deep here, and there's so much of it. It's rich loam, rich soil in terms of history.
Yes. So part of it is saying, figuring out what to talk about and what not to talk about.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The editing, very important.
Yeah.
And do you remember what your first walk was that you guided?
Montmartre. I'm sorry, the Marais.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the first.
Everybody remembers their first walk. It's like losing your virginity.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yes, absolutely. And I practiced it a bit with Oriel as well, so I wasn't But oh yeah, of course. The first few times you're a bit nervous, after a while it.
And can you tell us a little bit about Paris walks? I mean, I think I'm pretty sure how long they've been going, but how many guides, how many walks in their repertory, are there new ones being created, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, they started out in I believe 1994 doing regular scheduled walks that you could come go to a metro stop and then meet a group and go on a walk. So it's been over 27 years now almost. Mm-hmm. There are about 8 or 9 of us that work regularly with Paris Walks, and over the years there have been dozens of people that have worked with Paris Walks. So we're a relatively small group, although there are so many topics in Paris, as so many neighborhoods, and Paris is a collection of little villages And so over the years, I've developed about 40 different themes that I do, one kind or another. And then Paris Walks will be, they'll probably over the course of the year when we have a full schedule, of course, they usually do about 60 or 70 different themes in the course of a year. So there's quite a variety of walks that we do. And we are always developing new ones. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of clients who actually live in Paris, who like to go on English-speaking tours, and they're in Paris for 3 years or 5 years or longer. And of course, once they've done many of the walks, they're asking us, "Do you do this theme? Do you do that theme?" Or what? So we're always trying to find new themes that will be interesting for our regular clients, and that's fun. That's fun to do, and it always makes you think about new things. And
let's get one thing across, because there's nothing more important than this. And that's that you guys, you Paris Walks guides, you all live there, and you have lived there for a long time. You're fluent in the language and completely conversant with the history, the culture. You guys are not 20-year-old college students who are just passing through, who are handed a script to memorize, et cetera, et cetera. Can you verify that?
Yes, yes, absolutely. When I first started working with Paris Walks, I had been living here for 5 years, and that's probably the absolute minimum that you need in order to have someone who, and you have to have a feel for French culture, you have to speak the language, you have to, and people are always asking you questions, besides all the historical information you need to know, people are always asking you questions about what life is like in Paris, how things work, and you really have to know so much. And so it's a whole different thing than when people think of tour guide, they often think of someone who's just doing it for a short while, and it's just like a college job or something, whereas what we do is a real profession, and it's a real specialized thing that takes years to really develop. And it took years and years for me to be able to do many different tours, because it really takes a long time. I think the first tour I did, I basically prepared 3 or 4 months full time, working very hard to develop the tour. So it takes a long time.
And you know, they never stop changing, do they? I mean, it's a walking tour is done this way, and this is not the memorize a script way. It's an organic, a living thing, a change, because you find out new stuff.
Right, and people are always asking me things I haven't thought of, and sometimes I'll walk down a street with the group, and I've walked down that street 1,000 times, but they'll point up on something on a building, which I've never noticed before. Mm-hmm. And so then I have to think about that and incorporate that into. So you're always learning. And I'm sure if somebody went on a walk of mine that I did 20 years ago and then went on that same walk today, it would be a different walk. Mm-hmm. And maybe only half of it would be the same as what I was saying, you know, 20 years ago. And sometimes you find things are wrong that you read them in the books and the accounts, and then there's an article that's written that says, well, actually, that wasn't true. They've just discovered that something different was true. So mm-hmm. So you do have to keep up and make sure that you're up with the latest information about things. Yeah.
I mean, another factor in all of this, and I suspect it's the same in Paris, but here in London, you know, it takes a while. And by a while, I mean several years, to kind of gain acceptance and trust from the locals. But once that happens, then you start learning from them. They'll tell you things that, aren't in the books,
right?
So to speak, it's local. It's proper local knowledge, and that's just so wonderful. I also like very much when you're taking a group along, and you know, the locals will be saying hello to you as you go by. They call you by your name,
and, right?
Well, the walkers really like that. They think, oh my god, this guy, everybody here knows him. I mean, presumably you make friends with some of the Parisians on your routes. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And we often go by some of the same shops, and you know, you've known the shopkeeper for 20 years, and they see you come by, and sometimes you take him into the shop because they have something interesting to show. And generally, when you do the same neighborhood walks enough, you get to know everybody that lives in that neighborhood, and most of them get to know you, and they're used to your groups coming by, and they know that we're not just the regular tourists, you know, who are going through very quickly, and that we have an appreciation for them and what they do, and that we're respectful for them. We don't, you know, invade them and that kind of thing. So it really does make a difference to have a feel for a neighborhood and really know the people in the neighborhood. Yes.
Yeah. Somebody, I've forgotten who, but somebody once said, quality isn't expensive. It's priceless.
Oh, that's a great line.
Yeah, great line.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Yeah.
How about your clients? I mean, first of all, do you get Parisians? Do you get French people going on your
way? Yes, we do. We get always. There's usually several people who are locals who are Parisian, and sometimes it's because they want to learn English or they want to meet English speaking people. Sometimes it's because they're actually interested in the topic. For example, I do a lot of tours about World War II in Paris. And there are not French tour companies that really do the topic of World War II in Paris. So if they want to learn something about that theme, they often have to go on an English language walk to do that. So we have a few French people usually on the tours. And also I did a series of tours that was sponsored by the U.S. Embassy and the City of Paris, which I did in French. And it was for the 100th anniversary of the United States entering World War I. And so it was 2017, and they had done for 1917. And they were it was about the impact of the Americans in Paris and how they came during what American soldiers came during World War I, and all the American expatriate writers and artists came after the World War I, people like Ernest Hemingway. And so we had, those were all French people, basically, that came on those tours, and they were quite interested in something they wouldn't really quite get in tours in their own language,
And then... I have to ask you, do you know about the genesis of your Paris Walk's French Resistance Walk? Do you know that I'm responsible for that?
That's true. You suggested it, David.
Okay.
No, it's true. I don't think we quite realized that how popular it would be. I mean, I think we probably thought of it in the back of our minds that as a topic, but we never thought, well, would that be something people would like? And it's, and per your suggestion, it's become one of the most popular tours that we do, most popular themes. Yeah,
yeah. So I don't know if I told you how that came about. You know, I mean, they're all over. They're wonderful. They're fun. It's just flowers stuck in there, but it always says ECA Tumbe. And of course, my French non-existent. And I thought that meant here is entombed.
Ah,
I didn't understand
okay.
until many years later that it meant here fell.
Here
and
fell.
Then they gave the name, and it was always that about that same week in August 1944. And you know, they were always about 20 years old or 22 years old. And I remember thinking, oh, if I were running Paris Walks, I would definitely create a walking tour that told people about, a few of these people.
About what happened in Paris during the war, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm very proud of that.
Yes.
I think Peter dubbed that one our Peach Melba Walk because it was made for David.
Yes.
Absolutely wonderful. How about your clientele otherwise? I mean, they're not just tourists. They're sometimes, in addition to Parisians, they're expats who live there, et cetera. Is that right?
Right. So, and when we started out in the early days, we had more expats than anybody else. But now, as we become more and more known, it's a majority would be tourists. But we do have maybe 20 or 30% are expats. And then we have a fair number of Americans, of course, and then people from Britain, from all the English-speaking countries. And then we also get a fair number of Northern Europeans who come from Germany, Scandinavia, places where they can't find a tour in their native language, and they all understand English very well usually. So they like English language walks in Paris as well, and 10 or 20% are other Europeans as well.
Yeah. I mean, before we forget, let's get the URL out. I mean, obviously you're doing this one on Friday tomorrow for London Walks, www.walks.com, but what is the Paris Walks URL? How do they find out about you guys when you're doing shoe leather on pavement tours?
Yes, and our virtual tours are listed on Paris Walks site as well. And so you just Google Paris Walks, and it's paris-walks.com is the website. Right. And you can find all the things that we're offering. And we're still, during the pandemic, we're still doing private tours. I've been doing a few for people that live in Paris, and then of course when we can, we're putting up our regular schedule again, as well, hopefully as soon as possible.
Is the lockdown lifting there? I mean, we've just had this announcement, and it was made a day or two ago that in a couple of weeks, six people, so that means one guide and five walkers maximum. And I think we're going to start, we're going to be doing those. A few of the guides will, at any rate. And then obviously, they're going to push that number. If everything is okay, that number will push up in May, I think it is, to 30.
Right.
What about there, Brad?
Well, we've been in a bit of a different situation in that we've been, over the last year or so, kind of been going in and out of lockdown. And right now we're not really in lockdown, although we have a 6 p.m. curfew. And so the regular shops are open, the restaurants and bars and things are closed, the cafes are closed, and you can do takeout. But there's no limit in terms of the number of people, really, right now. They advise like no more than 6 people, but people are sort of gathering and 10 or 15 people out in the streets, maybe in front of a bar and things. But our numbers have not been very good lately. We're kind of at this high plateau of 20,000 infections a day in France. And so there's talk of further local restrictions. So over the next couple of weeks, we may find that they're going to alleviate the restrictions, or they may put us under a more strict confinement in a couple of weeks. So about but all of this time when we're not on the strict confinement, where we really can only go out for an hour a day, that was what it was like in the fall during the confinement. You could only go out for an hour a day, and you had to stay within a kilometer of your house. Obviously, you can't do tours in that kind of circumstance. But right now, we can do small private tours, and hopefully that will continue. But there's a chance we'll be locked down further, depending on what happens.
Brad, are you saying that Paris cafes are open? I mean, what I wouldn't
They're
give.
open for takeout. You can't sit down in the
I see.
cafe. So yeah, we're waiting for that quality of life to come back. No, you can stand outside a cafe and you can order a drink to take out. And theoretically, you're not supposed to loiter around cafes in groups, but people are kind of doing that a bit. But it's takeout food. So some of the restaurants and cafes and bars are offering takeout beer and whatever. But no, we can't sit down in restaurants like we could last summer. Between June and the end of October, we were really pretty much out of confinement, and you could go to the restaurants and cafes and sit outside. But yet we can't do that again yet.
Let's, I mean, you and I are both expats. We're both Yanks. I'm from the Midwest, you're from the West Coast. I've got this theory, it's more than a theory, really, that if you're an expat, you develop a kind of dual sensibility. I mean, I certainly have. And I think that's actually a big plus. Sometimes the outsider, the expat, the foreigner, will see things about the country that he's adopted, that he's relocated himself in, that the local doesn't see, the country or the culture, et cetera, et cetera. So, of course, you take on the coloration of the culture you move to. In some ways, my sensibility is probably at least a little bit English. I hope so after 49 years.
I don't hear your English accent yet.
Yeah, exactly. But what do you think? Is that, I mean, it must be the case with you. Is that right?
Oh yes, absolutely. And although I do find that the longer I live here, the more Parisian in my attitudes I become. But I think you're in a way you're somewhere between the two cultures, the US culture and the French culture. But it does give you, arriving and being in France, it does give you an outside perspective on French culture that the French wouldn't have. And then, of course, living in France for a long time, you certainly have a perspective on American culture that people in the US don't have.
Sure.
And
Are you
I
dual
think,
national now?
yes, so for the last, what, 11, 12 years, I've had dual citizenship.
Right.
And it used to be in the old days in the United States, you would have had to become a French citizen, you would have had to give up your US passport. But it's not true anymore. You can have multiple nationalities
Yeah,
if you
that's right.
keep your US passport.
I'm British as well as an American.
Yeah. But
There's
you're no
part
longer
of Paris
European.
waiting in, Brad.
I'm living in Montmartre, actually.
Oh,
Although
you're
kind of on
back in.
the Yeah, well, I live kind of on the back side of the hill, not at the famous top of the hill where you have the artist square and the big white Sacré-Cœur church. So I do live for a long time. I lived down by the Eiffel Tower, and in the last, what, 12 years or so, I've been living up here in the 18th district in Montmartre. So yeah, I very much enjoy doing the tours in the area, the neighborhood.
So that really is.
Yeah.
Capital L local knowledge when you're guiding Mo Mantra.
Yes.
That's right. What about, do you have favorite things about Paris? And then the other side of that coin, least favorite things about it?
Well, I think, of course, my favorite thing has to be the aesthetic of being able to walk around in the city and enjoy the historic architecture, which is still so well preserved. And I never get tired of looking at the same places I've seen every day. And it's, you know, kind of the opposite of what I experienced in the U.S. That has to be my favorite thing, just enjoying walking around, enjoying the buildings and the atmosphere. And the ability to just walk out the door and in, you know, a minute you're sitting in a cafe. I actually enjoy being able to go to the smaller shops in the neighborhood and buy your meat or your vegetables in a separate store, not going to a big supermarket. And also just sort of that village atmosphere that you get in so many of the neighborhoods where, you know, after a while, the shopkeeper gets to know you and you see the same people every day. And it really does feel like being in a little village, being in your, even though you're in a very big city. I find that when I'm here and I'm traveling around the city a lot, it's a very, very crowded city. It's really the most densely populated city in Europe. So depending on what neighborhood you're in, there are a lot of people on the streets, and there's a fair amount of noise and pollution and to deal with. But I must say, I don't really feel that many drawbacks of living here. I mean, I do live in a small apartment. So you do get used to having a smaller amount of space. I'm not, you know, living in a place where I could afford a big house or something, but so you do adjust to that. But in a way, I find that kind of liberating, being able to have the real urban experience. So
I imagine, I'm guessing, and I'm confident in what you'll say in reply to this, but I'm guessing that you, like me, well, I'm, you know, more or less every night, I'm on my knees thanking the good Lord that I get to live in London.
Yes.
You know, I just
absolutely
feel as I really landed with my bum in the butter. I mean, a small town kid from Wisconsin, I'm living in this wonderful, wonderful city. And I imagine you feel the same way then. Am I right about
yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and when we were first offered the opportunity to come here, I didn't have to take 10 seconds to say yes. You know, it's like I knew. You know instinctively, it's a good thing to do. Yeah.
So, absolutely. Like me, you're a lifer. You're going to stay then.
Yeah, you know, I don't. You never know what will happen, but I intend to stay for sure. Yeah. And I meet many expatriates who live here, and you say, well, do you think you're going to stay in Paris? And they say, well, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'll go back. And you ask them, well, how long have you been here? And they say 40 years. Yeah. So I think they're, whether you feel ambivalent about it or not, you're here to stay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just curious as a, you know, as a dad, as a father, I mean, you know, I'm American, but my kids are so English. Now you've got a daughter. Is she French and American? Is she French? Is she a...
Yeah, I think my daughter is somewhere in between. She grew up, when we moved here, she was 18 months old. Uh-huh. And she went to the local French schools, neighborhood school, for, 7-8 years. And then she went to a bilingual school through high school. So So then she really truly became bilingual. And I have the feeling that when she's in France, she feels like she's American. Uh-huh. But when she's in the United States or really outside of Europe, she feels like she's French.
Yeah.
And you know, they have the expression third culture kid. You have a different culture being someone who's grew up in a different place. And so I think she feels that's a great advantage. I mean, they're very adaptable, and she's done a lot. She's worked and lived in a lot of different places.
Sure.
So
I'm guessing that unlike her father, she doesn't speak French with a slight American accent. I'll bet.
No.
Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. And I think she was making fun of my accent as, when she was 4 years old. She was already making fun of my accent. And she would say, "Dad, say a word with an R in it." And then she and her friends would laugh at me.
Oh, that's absolutely brilliant.
So that's the advantage of starting to learn another language when you're an infant, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's end. Can you tell us a little bit about Friday's tour, Brad? I mean, first of all, the practicals. What time does it start? How do they find out about it, et cetera, et cetera?
So they start, the tour starts at 8 p.m. Paris time. So that would be in London, it would be 7 p.m. And then if you're on the East Coast of the U.S., that would be 2 p.m. And then if you're in the West Coast of the U.S., that would be 11 a.m. But it's 8 p.m. Paris time, Central European time. And if you go on the Paris Walk site or the London Walk site, there's a link, and you can get the tickets through the Eventbrite site, and it will give you the Zoom link. And then when the hour arrives, you just click on the Zoom link, and that will bring you into the group.
Well, Mary and I will be there.
Great.
Even though we've done that one. Well, in fact, I think all of your Paris Walk, because we go a lot.
You've done every Paris Walk.
Yeah, more than once, and we've enjoyed Yeah. multiple times, and we've enjoyed them every single time. We also always learn new things every time. So
yeah, and so this one we'll be seeing a good amount of the neighborhood of Montmartre, and you know it's quite a unique neighborhood in Paris, and it really does feel like a village. You know, kind of you feel like you're not really in Paris anymore in a way. It really feels quite different, and we'll be kind of making our way up to the top of Montmartre, where you have the famous Sacred Heart Church and the famous Artist Square. And it's quite an eclectic tour. We'll be seeing like a very early medieval church. We'll be seeing where the famous artist lived because Montmartre was really the kind of the center of the universe if you were an artist, late 19th, early 20th century. So we'll see where, you know, Renoir, Picasso, Toulouse, Lautrec, all these famous artists live. And we'll also talk about the cabarets and the jazz clubs, because the cabaret tradition really started in Montmartre. And also the jazz clubs and the African-American musicians that came to Montmartre and really brought jazz to Paris in the early 1920s. So there's so many things to see, and there's nice little gardens, and we'll be seeing a vineyard, where they still make local wine, Paris. You can actually buy Paris wine, and really quite a picturesque neighborhood. So,
I'm confident. I imagine it'll be very much along the lines of ours. In other words, you're going to be working with maps and
yeah, we'll have some maps and photographs, and we'll really get a sense of what the different parts of Montmartre look like, and who was there. We'll have photos of the important people who really gave it its importance. Yeah.
You know, one of the things I've realized about this plague year, and it's been disastrous in so many ways, but, you know, the cliche of, you know, every cloud, silver lining and all of that. I mean, this is a sort of new form of touring that willy-nilly we've invented. And I think anyone who's sitting, for example, on the other side of the Atlantic and is turning over in their mind, maybe next summer we're going to go to Europe. Maybe we're going to go to Paris, London. I mean, it makes so much sense to go on one of these things because, I mean, it really is beat your guide. You find, I mean, you know, they've got a local, they've got you live. And they can put questions to you and get recommendations and get a feel for what's there. I mean, would you concur? I know the answer is yes.
Yes. Well, no, I think what we're doing now, I think it's quite an unusual thing. It's not just like a travelogue that you could watch on, you know, any television channel or something, because it really is with the local people and their local sensibility. And I think you have kind of a depth and a feeling for it with what we do than you wouldn't get otherwise. And it's a way, and there's so much that you can see online as well. And you can really, in a way, you can cover more than you would if you were walking around. So it really is quite a nice opportunity to try this sort of different way of touring.
Absolutely the case. Yeah, travel, they're not a travelogue. And it's not the same as looking at the holiday snaps that your neighbor took when he was in Paris. And the difference
right.
is your neighbor... He doesn't really know very much about what he pointed his camera at, except maybe it's an appealing view. You guys do. We know here in London. I came across this fantastic thing that Constable, the great romantic painter, said. He said, without understanding, there is no seeing till there's understanding.
Oh, that's a nice way of putting
yeah,
it. Yeah,
it really puts it so well, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
That understanding. I mean, there was someone who was asking about these things. They were saying, well, is it just photos and maps? And, you know, the answer to that is no, it's not just photos and maps. If anything, the narrative is more important.
Yeah.
Because that provides the understanding. That's what enables you to see into those images. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it still does have the flavor of being on a walking tour. Mm. It's not just someone showing you their slides and explaining what's in the picture. I mean, there's a whole different aspect to it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think I'll let you go now, Brad, and I'm really looking forward. I'll put this up right away, and really looking forward to, gosh, it's 28 hours from now, something like that.
Yeah, it was great to talk to you. And yeah, we'll see you tomorrow very soon.
Yeah, yeah. See you tomorrow. And we'll do this again, you know?
Yeah, good idea, yeah. Great.
Please say hello to everybody.
I will, you too.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot, Brad.
All right, see you soon. Take care. Thanks, bye.